Buenos días. Qué bueno. Me llamo Cristina de Ana Rivera Silva de Ramírez. Soy la hija de Dolores Silva y la nieta de Socorro Cárdenas. Vivo en Stanton, pero soy de Los Ángeles. Mi mamá es mexicana y mi papá es puertorriqueño. Y ni en el mundo de latino. Es una mezcla que es un poquito extraña, puertorriqueño y mexicano. Pero todas mis familias son católicas y viven en Los Ángeles también. Pero no son todos. Mis hijos están aquí, mi mamá está aquí. Y ahorita, alguien es quienes están aquí, piensen que estoy en la iglesia equivocado, ¿sí? ¿Cuánto ella habla en inglés? So, yes, you're in the right place. We didn't change the entire service. You shouldn't be here at 11:15. 9:15 is good. But how did that feel, right? How did it feel? Was it in the pit of your stomach? Were you a little bit concerned that maybe you weren't at the right service? Like maybe we had changed something up and we didn't tell you? Like maybe it was supposed to be a different time and different place. And that feeling that you get when you're a little bit uncomfortable, it's kind of hard to sit with sometimes, right? It's a little difficult to be uncomfortable in a place that you come to seeking comfort. And yet we're going to come back to that. So I want you to remember when I was in the middle of that, if you were feeling a little bit uncomfortable, I want you to remember how that felt. For some folks here, it didn't feel uncomfortable. For my brothers and sisters of color, we know what it's like to go through life code switching. We do it every day. My children do it between parents. They're biracial, right? So they have two different cultures, even within their own home, that they code switch between. And so today I would say to my brothers and sisters of color, this is of course for you, but maybe not of you, a lot of what I'm going to be talking about today. So the sermon title is being called out, called in, and showing up. So what's the difference between those two, called out and called in? You know, we used to know what being calling somebody out was. Well, you're not doing this right. But recently, there's been more calling in. And what does that look like to us as Unitarian Universalists? During the 1960s civil rights movement, we did a lot of calling out. We did a lot of pointing out where laws and racial inequities and social inequities existed, right? We had Brown versus Board of Education. We had the Civil Rights Act. We had a lot of emphasis on what the law could do for us. We had a lot of emphasis on what politics could do for us. And don't get me wrong, that was extraordinarily important, right? Marriage equality, extraordinarily important to being able to know that we were making progress. Brown versus Board of Education, integration of our schools, extraordinarily important that we knew where we were going. But it was also just one tool, right? And we know now, 40, 50 years later, that those laws are only as worthwhile as the paper that they're written on because they are enforced and upheld by human beings. And if we haven't done the work to call into conversation and call into affirmation and call into transformation, it doesn't matter, because the folks who are enforcing those laws will continue to enforce them in ways that promote injustice and inequity in our communities. So now what we have is these feelings of being called out, but also called in. So what does that look like? What does that look like as Unitarian Universalists? At our most recent General Assembly, the youth of our faith filled the stage, filled the stage. Imagine if you could, a really, really huge convention center. The youth filled the stage along with racial justice activists and said, "We're calling you in. Everybody who's here and everybody who is here represents a congregation in our community. We're calling you in to this conversation because we see you talking about Black Lives Matter. We see your banners about Black Lives Matter. We see you talking and wanting to do and wanting to make a difference. We don't see that difference being embodied in our congregations. We are calling you out and we're calling you in." And that's powerful. That is powerful because it seeks to transform not just the words, not just what we say we are about, but our actions. What are we going to do about that? Black Lives Matter, the movement itself, the movement for Black Lives, is centered around calling in. It's centered around calling us into our own internalized anti-blackness, anti-brownness, misogyny, homophobia. It's calling on us to have these conversations that are difficult, right? When we're scared, it's saying we have to have those conversations. When we're frustrated, we have to have those conversations. When we're tired, when we just want to go home and have a peaceful meal, right? We just want to go home. We just want to see our family and have a peaceful meal, and something comes up and you have to, right there on the spot, make that calculation. Am I going to have this difficult conversation now? That is what the calling in is. Because nobody else is at that table but you, right? Those youth and racial justice activists that were on that stage, they're not there at your dinner table. But they were calling you in to having those conversations during those times when you're scared, during those times when you're frustrated, during those times when all you want to do is have that peaceful meal. So why would we do this as Unitarian Universalists? Like, you know, what is it about you that says we should be doing this? Why do we gather together and say that we should be doing this? Well, the second you, the Universalist part of our faith, says that we already have heaven on earth. It says that we're already saved, that we already have all of the tools that we need in order to create heaven on earth here. We have to realize it in order to realize it. Our Unitarian faith says we already have John Luther Adams' 5 smooth stones. His 4th smooth stone says, "We deny the immaculate conception of virtue and affirm the necessity of social incarnation." Immaculate, we deny the immaculate conception of virtue. That means that we are saying it doesn't just happen, right? Virtue does not just happen when we are born, right? It's something that we have to work at. It's something that our faith says we have to work at. So what do those two look like? Close your eyes. What does it look like for you for heaven on earth? Can you picture it? Can you hear it? What does it taste like? What is the feeling? What is the sound to you of heaven on earth? To me, it sounds a lot like the child in the pews. It sounds like really vibrant, exciting music. Thank you so much. That was fabulous. It tastes like food that's spiced with oregano and sazon. It's really vibrant colors. But that's what it looks like to me. And to you, it's going to look different, and that's okay, right? We don't have to agree on exactly what it's going to look like. We have to make space for what it looks like to each other. But we don't have to agree on exactly what it's going to look like. Maybe it looks like that some days and not others, right? Maybe there's a worship service that completely speaks to your soul one day, and you're so excited and so happy that you had those words and you had that experience. And then next week, meh, not so much. But that's okay, because maybe that Sunday is the Sunday that spoke to somebody else, and we keep coming back. So talking about those difficult conversations, right? It's easy to say, right? Oh, just go on out there and have those difficult conversations. It's not difficult to do that. Come on, we can just do that at any time. When I first started preaching many years ago, my sons, Andreas and Miguel, insisted that I use pop culture in every sermon I preached. And I said, okay, well, you know, it's kind of hard. We've got lots of different folks who experience lots of different things, lots of different age ranges. What do you think in pop culture could speak to all of them? Without missing a heartbeat, The Simpsons. Mama, The Simpsons will do it. You, anything that you need to preach on, you will find a Simpsons reference. You go for it. Like, all right, here we go. But I found over the years, they're actually kind of true. They're kind of right. And so most recently in The Simpsons, there's this great episode where Marge and Homer are in bed, and Marge is kissing Homer, and she stops, and she says, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I can't do it until I know who I'm voting for, and I know I'm going to vote for her. And he says, okay, well, that's fine. I'm voting for Trump. And she says, well, I don't think I can be with you if you're voting for him. And he deadpans without missing a heartbeat, and that's how I became a Democrat. Right? And so if it was that easy, right, that would be great. But what's interesting about that is that they have that relationship, right, to make that conversation work. They have invested and bound up in each other what is holy in their relationship. And so what I would say is, where are your spheres of influence? Where are your relationships? Where are those places where you can have those conversations? You don't need to have it every second of every day. But there are places. There are places in your life that I will never be invited to. Because the color of my skin, because of where I come from, because of my sex, because of my sexuality, I will never be welcome in those spaces. And you are. When I go through my day, when I go through my week, working here, living in Stanton, there are weeks that can go by that I never see another person who looks like me. I want you to think about that for a moment. Think about if you went for an entire week, except for my sons, without seeing anyone who looked like you. How does that feel? Where is your strength? What do you draw from? How do you go through life? Those places that you have access to that I don't, that's where we're looking for. That's what we're asking you to engage in. So after the election, whew, boy, that was something, wasn't it? We had countless UUs coming to me, coming to other UUs of color saying, what can we do? What can we do? Many of you, God bless you, came to me and said, what can we do? What do you need, Chris? What do we do? And so this invitation to speak to you is part of that answer, right? So remember that uncomfortable feeling? Cuando todas las palabras que usando son en español y tus estómagos como así? You remember that feeling? All right. Hold on to it, and remember that at the end of that feeling, everything was okay. So here's we go. What do we need? We need you and everyone who isn't in this room right now to show up. We need you to show up with guests. We need you to show up in here and out there. We need more Unitarian Universalists. I strongly believe that Unitarian Universalism is one of the ways that we will achieve mutual liberation. It is a faith that calls us to the work. It is a faith that affirms us in the work. It is a faith that holds holy our mutual liberation. We need more UUs. We don't need more soccer players. We don't need more orchestra players. We don't need more swimmers, chess champions, book clubs, wine tasters. It's fabulous if we have all of those Unitarian Universalist swimmers, Unitarian Universalist soccer players, Unitarian Universalist wine tasters, Unitarian Universalist book club members. Fabulous. Want that. That identity as Unitarian Universalists is what we're looking for. This is not a social club, right? It's not a cool place to show up on Sunday where you can believe or you can think or you can espouse anything that you want. It is not a place where we can believe anything we want. We don't believe that hate speech is right. We don't believe that racial injustice and inequity is okay. It's about showing up here and making a difference out there. And that is not just about Sunday. It is about all the other days of the week. It means taking allyship, which means taking direction from people of color, particularly women of color. It means stepping back when those folks ask you to step back, even if you don't understand why they are asking you to step back. Right? Because that is a tremendous point of privilege, to have to understand everything before you're willing to do it. Means taking classes on white privilege and then acting on what you learn in them. It means disappointing the soccer team or the choir because your priority is getting your children to religious education. It means stewardship of Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church. It means your time, your talent, and your treasure. Those are so important to be able to do the work that we need to do for mutual liberation. It means calling religious professionals who are trained in anti-racism, anti-oppression, multicultural work, and then compensating them at the UUA Fair Compensation Guidelines. It means paying Black and Brown activists for projects like Safety Pin Box, which works towards our mutual liberation. And this is a tough one, folks. It means realizing that the recent election has nothing to do with our mutual liberation. Right? It's only as important as that paper that's written on. If that election would secure our mutual liberation, it would have already happened. We had President Obama for 8 years. If all it took was being more diverse in Congress, we would already have our mutual liberation. Those are the symptoms. They are not the root of what we need to change. It means having youth and young adults in positions of power and influence in our congregations and in our world. Thank you all so much for affirming Annalee Derlin-Jones as a member of our Board of Trustees here. That's huge. And it means challenging what you see coming home every day. If you're a family, you have children coming home, why is it that their science class has that wonderful, hopefully their science class has that wonderful evolution? Everybody's seen the evolution kind of picture that ends with a man kind of like in the Da Vinci pose, right? Why is that a white man and not a Black woman? Right? If we're really talking about evolution, if we're really talking about showing up, it means showing up in all the ways that are hard and difficult and doing it over and over and over again until we are at mutual liberation. In our lifetime, I believe it can happen. Certainly in the next generation's lifetime, absolutely. But I'm not willing to sacrifice another generation by saying, this is generational work, This is our generation's work. And by our, I mean all of us. I see all of the different generations in here. It's the time is now. So I want to just reflect back to being, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? It wasn't so bad. We're all still here. We all still love each other. It wasn't born out of guilt or shame. Those aren't neat things that we need. It was born because we've developed relationship, right? And we know that we can be uncomfortable with each other and come out of it on the other side. I'm going to close with these words from my sister, Asada Shakur, who's in exile in Cuba. I say my sister. She's all of our sister, right? She's not just my sister. She's not biologically related to me. I've never met her. But she has these words for us, and I invite you to repeat them with me. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and support one another. We have nothing to lose but our chains. Todo va bien, mis amores.